Welcome to the Resilient Nurse Podcast, where we discuss the tools and practices nurses, such as faculty, students, and new nurses, are using to renew and amplify their resilience. This podcast is a special series within the Johns Hopkins School of Nursing's On the Pulse podcast. In each episode, we cover the complexities, the misconceptions, and many new pathways toward keeping our nursing workforce resilient throughout Maryland and beyond. Our podcast comes out of the R3 initiative, which stands for Renewal, Retention, and Resilience in Maryland Nurses. I'm your host, Nancy Reller, and today my guest is Karen Doyle. Karen is the Senior Vice President of Patient Care Services and Chief Nursing Officer at the University of Maryland Medical Center. Karen, welcome.
Thank you, Nancy. It's great to be here.
Well, thank you for coming, and thank you for what I'm sure is going to be a wonderful conversation. As we designed R3, we felt like it was really important to include nurses throughout Maryland at a variety of level, you know, students, faculty, hospital administrators, among others, and in a variety of ways. Your involvement has been through the Coordinating Council of R3, which is a group of chief nursing officers and schools of nursing deans across Maryland. It's helped us stay really close to the voices of the students that we want to hear from most. We have learned the significant challenges that you as CNOs are facing, and that's really our focus of our podcast discussion today. Before we get into that completely in a deeper dive, I'd like to just step back for a second. We are emerging perhaps out of the initial pandemic, which started with a deep concern about the nursing shortage that was already in place. You have a variety of unique perspectives about what nurses are experiencing now. I'd love for you to describe to our listeners where you see the state of resilience for your bedside nurses.
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, at this point, we continue to, like you say, emerge from this pandemic with still some significant challenges. Prior to the pandemic, we were facing a nursing shortage, and the pandemic has just accelerated that. And so we are faced with significant nursing shortages, not just in the acute care setting, but entering nursing school. And so we have a shortage of nurse faculty. So couple the shortage of nurses at the bedside in an acute care setting and the shortage of faculty, we really are facing a further nursing shortage in the future. So today, our challenges are making sure that we manage the right numbers of nurses with the right number of patients. So nurse-patient ratios matter and experience matters. So we've lost a significant number of experienced nurses at the bedside. So there is a large gap between, you know, the novice nurses and an experienced nurse. Mm-hmm. So the nurses coming out of school are fantastic, not experienced. And the training in nursing school during the pandemic was altered because there weren't a lot of clinicals. We're faced with a lack of nurses and inexperienced nurses and a lack of faculty to teach nurses coming, you know, into school.
Yeah, the perfect awful storm in many ways, right?
Correct.
What do you think is the hardest part for your nurses, your bedside nurses?
There are many things that are hard. They're talented and bright and educated. I think the novice nurse, they want to make sure that they have the skill set that is required and the competency that is required. So, you know, the first year is really unnerving, and we want to make sure that we provide those resources. The other thing that is really hard for the nurses is, if you would ask most nurses, is what I call wraparound services. we need to allow our nurses to practice top of license. And the wraparound services that I'm speaking of are the support services, having the EVS, the dietary, the nursing assistants, or patient care technologists that support the nurse to practice at their top of license. While we're experiencing a nursing shortage, there's a workforce shortage. Mm-hmm. And so the nurse is the stopgap. What worries them every day is making sure they have an adequate number of resources to care for the patients that they have under their scope and the support services to help them do that.
Mm-hmm. This sort of speaks to the larger question about the nursing profession as a whole. So I'm really interested in what else our listeners should know and understand about the nursing profession.
The nursing profession is a profession filled with privilege. We get to experience patients and families at the most wonderful time of their lives with the delivery of a healthy baby, and at the worst time in their lives when, you know, maybe a cancer diagnosis or a death. So we're filled with gratitude for sharing that privilege with patients and families. And the future is bright for nursing, yet we have some hurdles in the next 10 years that we have to overcome. Those hurdles, as I said, are the severe nursing shortage, with many nurses retiring and many opportunities for nurses outside of the acute care setting. COVID has brought a lot of benefits to nursing, whether it's remote work. And so we'll get creative with virtual nursing and we'll get creative with nurses working remotely. And so that's a great thing. Yet we still need to figure out how to get nurses into nursing school and to create being a faculty member an attractive role for nurses. So I do think that the future of nursing is bright. Nursing drives excellence and quality in the healthcare system, hands down. Mm. Nurses are the coordinators of care. Nurses are intelligent. Nurses link from A to B to C. And we are the linchpin for coordinated, excellent care for patients and families. And without nursing, the healthcare system really is fragile and vulnerable. Now, we need to create opportunities where nurses are practicing at top of license. And so I think that our roles will change over time. I believe that nursing will become more delegators of care than perhaps delivering care and overseeing care if the nursing shortage continues in this venue. We do need to think about how to change our care delivery model so that the nurse is leading and directing care and monitoring care and driving those quality outcomes and patient outcomes that are required in our healthcare delivery system. So I think that that is our future, figuring out how to redesign how nursing works in an acute care hospital and in the ambulatory setting.
It mirrors much of the container you're in, right? The society that we all live in that is trying to rejigger how we work. You know, you all can't really do, or you haven't been able to do, hybrid. Your creativity, your openness to explore and say, wow, this is a time when we can stretch and be something new that is still with the patient. So the way you describe it sounds very exciting.
So there is a lot of opportunities. I'll talk about virtual nursing for 1 second. So I had spoken that our experienced nurses are retiring. And so virtual nursing gives us the opportunity to work with extremely seasoned nurses with fairly novice nurses at the bedside. So what is a possibility for virtual nursing? One of the things that we're looking at is for our cancer patients to deliver chemotherapy. A nurse has to be certified. So imagine having a virtual nurse at home working with some novice nurses, but guiding them through the certification process for delivering chemotherapy, the safety protocols for delivering chemotherapy, and that more novice nurse having that very experienced nurse guiding them along the way. So we're working through those processes now, and there are some hospitals that have actually launched some virtual nursing. And some of my colleagues and I are working through the creativity of what are the possibilities so that we offer these opportunities for flexibility, yet still contributing to the nursing profession in a way that is incredibly meaningful.
Mm. Wow. It certainly speaks to the issue of resilience.
Absolutely. And there are other roles for nurses, such as like case managers and utilization review nurses. And we have been able to offer those opportunities. We never in a million years thought that that could be a remote possibility. You have to be in the hospital. You have to be here. So one of the great things about COVID is that it has allowed us to think differently and how to connect with people. Mm. And so we're able to keep these very experienced individuals that are needed at home, remote, but contributing significantly. So looking at COVID in the positive, we wouldn't have thought of these things.
Right.
And it forced us to think of these things in a much different way, which keeps people in the workforce longer.
Yeah, I just love the idea of this, of coming through so many different avenues, like through the side door in a way of, oh, we need to keep nurses resilient, working, you know, with integrity, address the burnout, and having these other ways of looking at it. So it's so exciting to listen to you talk about this. I want to dive a little bit into the resilient piece of you and your nursing staff. We know that in your position as the CNO, you're really consumed with the needs of your staff, always looking for ways to keep them safe and fulfilled and practicing with the highest of integrity. We also know that it's important for you to take care of yourself first. I'd love to hear from your perspective how this time in healthcare is impacting you and your resilience personally.
Such a great question, and not easy to answer, to tell you the truth. You know, I've grew up in nursing in a time when, you know, nursing is 24/7, especially in leadership roles, and it's your vocation, it's who you are, and a lot of history in that regard. And one of the things that I find so exciting, to be truthful with you, is I love our youthful nurses in that they have forced many of us, and not just youthful nurses, I think youth in general have placed a high value on self-care, self-stewardship, and embracing that is really important for us as nurse leaders. I won't say that I've done it perfectly. Mm-hmm. I think through executive coaching, which is really important for all of us. How do we model self-care for our team? And so truthfully, Nancy, this is something that I've really worked on. And I will tell you, as a CNO, I was going to take a vacation. And we typically in healthcare, for whatever reason, do not put an out-of-office message
right
on our email.
Right.
Right. And so the inbox comes and you're stressed. So I committed to my team that I was taking PTO, and I told them, they need you to know how hard it is for me to put on my out of office message. And they're like, we got this. So doing that one act for 1 week changed my ability to relax, bolstered my team's thinking, and man, she really trusts us and we've got this. But it also empowered them to do the same. And so we've been on a quest to really make sure we manage our time at work with time of day that we send emails, how we communicate, what's urgent, what's not. And then personally, I started walking and listening to Audible books that had nothing to do with work. And with my girlfriends, I started a reading club. I did intentionally think about there has to be something outside of work that fuels me that helps me at work and also models it for others. So I don't want to say that it's been easy, mm-hmm. but it's been a very thoughtful exercise that is really needed. And I am grateful to our youth for forcing that.
Wow. I have to say that this self-reflection, and hats off to your executive coach partnering with you to figure that out. It is hard. This is the hard stuff to do, but your ability to stay open and really adapt and adopt what you're hearing from younger voices is tremendous. Erin, can you talk a little bit about what's happened since you've practiced these resources and tools and activities around resilience?
So the effect is my direct reports feel completely empowered and do not worry that I'm going to second guess a decision. That has been remarkable, not just for me, but for them and their own development. Two, people don't feel guilty about taking PTO and they're coming back rejuvenated. I believe we're seeing that with our frontline leaders. I worry about the nurse manager role as much as I worry about the staff at the bedside. Our nurse managers are running multi-million dollar businesses and they are feeling empowered that I need the PTO, I need the time off, and they are building depth within their teams on the front line. So we're seeing, honestly, a little bit more safety in speaking up that it's time for me to take PTO. I have somebody that can cover for me. They cover for one another. So I do think that I see more energy in the leadership team because they're able to walk away, decompress, and come back with some renewed energy.
This is a great time to talk a little bit about the intersection of individual resilience and organizational resilience. There's a lot of talk about, well, you got to get the systems to be supportive and psychologically safe. No, you need to do, you know, the individuals have to be resilient. They have to figure out their work-life balance. It's a yes and, right?
Right. I like that both and language. The executive coach, we're doing a lot with the both and. It's not an either or. And I think individuals, yes, certainly need to figure out what works for them because everybody's a little bit different. But in all sincerity, it is incumbent upon us as an organization to recognize the health of our staff and for us to contribute to the health of the staff. If I think about workplace violence, mm-hmm. It's extraordinary and there is no easy answer. But for us to not recognize it and not make valiant efforts to mitigate workplace violence along with our team, shame on us. I do believe as a healthcare industry, we're making some strides in that. We're in the business of helping people and now trying to get our heads around how we manage the workplace violence is very difficult. Yet it's incumbent upon us as executives in the healthcare industry to address it and allow our staff to be safe.
Mm-hmm. So what does it look like from your perspective to support a resilient organization?
When it comes to workplace violence, there's a couple of things. I think one, our frontline needs to know that we as executives care and that we're trying to figure out ways to mitigate it. So an organization that tries to be resilient with the workplace violence will certainly have a visitor code of conduct. There are many organizations that have the RISE program where a peer can call another peer confidentially and say, I've shared this experience. And that could be a medication error, that could be a patient error, but it could be a workplace violence situation. I've had this experience, you know, how do you help me through that? We all offer employee assistance programs. We offer strategies for how to manage workplace violence, for instance, crisis prevention intervention. So how do we invest in training our frontline on de-escalation techniques and strategies on how to do that? So a resilient organization will have a menu of items of how to manage some of these issues. Mm-hmm. And then I think one of the biggest ways for our staff to see that we're supportive is that with our governmental relations colleagues, that we really work with the legislature on how to prosecute folks that assault our employees because that happens. And then how do we as an organization support that employee, whether it's standing side by side, time off. There's a menu of items that a resilient organization must offer for our folks that experience this. Mm-hmm. So in the hospitals, we're dealing with individuals that are impaired, may lack some competency or capacity issues, struggle with coping mechanisms, and can be very frustrating in managing a healthcare system. So our nurses in the emergency departments and psychiatric departments will see verbal abuse, verbal aggression, verbal threats, and sometimes actual assaults. So this does happen in the workplace arena.
So these are patients coming into the hospital who are violent, and your nursing staff and other staff are dealing with the complexities of patient care for this individual, and it's on the rise nationally, correct?
That is correct. Patients and or families. And we've seen nationally where there have been, you know, shootings in whether it's emergency departments or with their physician, it is on the rise. Many of us work together to figure out the right strategies. I didn't mention a strong security workforce as well, so that our teams feel that they have the proper security personnel by their side to help manage this is essential.
So Karen, when you think about the R3 initiative that you've been involved with, year four is really about dissemination. We have 30 tools. How do you see the value of R3? How have you used it personally, or how have you encouraged your colleagues and your staff? Maybe it's simply an awareness of the importance of resilience.
R3 has been terrific for me to be involved in as a new CNO to begin with. So to be part of that coordinating council and on the front and helping understand renewal, retention, and resilience. And then when we look at all the modules and all the resource tools that are available through R3, this is a powerful tool. And the reason why it's so powerful, it isn't just for novice nurses. This runs the gamut. It runs the gamut from a novice nurse that is just entering practice to a very seasoned nurse who is a new CNO. And let me give you some examples of that. In reviewing some of the modules, if I look at the receiving feedback and asking for and receiving support, that is so essential for our new grads in their entry into practice. And the modules are so well developed and so real. And what I mean by real is that they're applicable. These are easily applicable. People can take these scenarios, incorporate them into their daily practice as they wish, and they're useful. Fast forward to someone who's a little bit more seasoned. I've been around a little bit. And using the modules such as the power and influence of narrative, right? How do I change culture as a CNO? How do I renew our image for nursing? How do I create a positive movement and create that narrative? Understanding that my words matter. I think looking at a module like belonging in nursing, not only is that important for the novice nurse, it's important for the nurse manager, preceptors, CNOs, to understand how do we create that sense of belonging, because that's where people are going to thrive. So that module is critical. There are modules on mindfulness. And if that is helpful to someone, that might resonate with somebody. It might not resonate with everyone, but they're really well done. And if that works for you, that module is beautiful. For somebody like me, again, shifting culture to support resilience and ethical practices, that was an incredibly meaningful module for me. How do we shift patterns through design? How do we change the narrative is really critical. And then finally, aligning values and purpose to our work. I love the work of Simon Sinek. I've used it for about the last 10 years. And I think that that's really valuable to all nurses in finding your why and connecting to your why. So these modules are applicable for all levels. I will tell you, Nancy, that we are, through my own work on this, going to incorporate it into our nurse residency program. That is an area of opportunity where we help our novice nurses enter from academia to practice. And I think it's an incredibly well-oiled tool that is beneficial to our nurse residency programs.
I want to ask you one short last question. What gives you hope for the future
I do think the time is now for nursing. I think this is a great opportunity for nursing to have a narrative about our value in the healthcare delivery system. And I think our voice collectively is being heard. I think as nurse leaders, we are much more sophisticated at using our voice in venues that matter. And then the second thing that gives me hope and really brightens my spirits, the nurses coming out of nursing school are incredibly talented, incredibly bright, and they're going to change the future. They learn differently than many, you know, baby boomer nurses, and will have creativity, will have longevity, will have resiliency in changing our care delivery redesign. And so that gives me hope. Nursing is a honorable career, and it's a privileged career with lots of avenues and lots of opportunity. And our men and women going into nursing today are going into it for the right reasons, with the right intelligence, and most importantly, filled with compassion.
Thank you so much, Karen. I see the passion in you. I see the dedication you have to your profession, to your nurses. I feel confident that it's very fulfilling and rewarding to be a nurse. Thank you for being with us.
Nancy, thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
The R3 website hosts over 30 resilience tools and practices for faculty, students, and new nurses throughout Maryland. Also found on the website are beautifully designed and really very easy to use free social media graphics that are available for personal and professional distribution. The R3 website address is nursing.jhu.edu/R3. We hope you'll join us next time for the Resilient Nurse Podcast. Funding for R3 comes from the Nurse Support Program 2 grant, which is administered by the Maryland Higher Education Commission and is funded through the Health Services Cost Review Commission.